Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents How to Beguile a Duke by Ali Broadfield, narrated by Evelyn Rose. Prologue. Acklins Island, Bahamas, 1806. A warm, salt-scented breeze drifted through the open window. Waves arched onto the beach and captured sand, dragging it back into the water. The breeze ruffled Catherine's hair. Her lone candle flickered against the ceiling, revealing the mermaid Papa had painted for her. The mermaid looked just like Mama, who was late, as usual. Catherine sighed and rolled onto her stomach. Finally, footsteps sounded in the corridor outside her chamber. "I'm sorry, darling. Your brother did not want to go to sleep." Mama sat beside her on the bed and rubbed her back. "Which story would you like tonight?" Catherine sat up and leaned against her pillows, wiggling to make them fit against her properly.
"The tiara story."
Mama smiled. She asked that question every night, and Catherine responded with the same answer every night. "Though I've never seen the tiara, there was a painting of your great-grandmother hanging on the wall of the Great Hall at Wolseley Manor. She wore a sparkling tiara made entirely of pink diamonds, some of them larger than my thumb." Mama held up her thumb, and Catherine placed hers against it. "The tiara is rumoured to have once belonged to Empress Elizabeth of Russia." Bouncing on the bed, Catherine asked,
"Where is it now?"
Mama tapped on her nose. "We don't know. Your great-grandmother hid it somewhere at Wolseley Manor to prevent your great-grandfather, the Viscount Wolseley, from selling it. In her journal, she left clues about where the tiara is hidden. Your grandmother had the journal, but when your grandfather died, his cousin inherited Wolseley Manor and the journal along with it. Grandmother hid the journal in the library at Wolseley before we left to come to America. It still sits there, hidden in the library, waiting for some smart young lady to come and find it."
"Me!"
Catherine shouted. "Shush," Mama said, and tickled her tummy. "You don't want to wake your brother. It will be many years before you are old enough to travel to England." Catherine yawned and slid down into her bed.
"Tell me about England."
"Well, England is very different from the Bahamas. It's green. Everything is green. And cool and wet. There are rolling hills and forests, huge stone houses with hundreds of rooms. And sometimes it snows. But your great-grandmother's journal is warm and dry inside the library." Her eyes were getting heavy, but she fought to keep them open. Mama leaned to whisper in her ear, "And someday, when you're all grown up, you will go to Wolseley Manor and find the journal and the tiara." Catherine let her eyelids drop, picturing the green landscape, the rolling hills, the houses made of stone. Someday, she would live at Wolseley Manor, and she would wear the tiara whenever she held a ball. Mama kissed her cheek and blew out the candle. Chapter 1. London, 1820. Catherine Malbeuf awoke with a start and reached for her knife. She cast her eyes around the carriage and stilled, waiting for some indication of what had awoken her. There were no unusual sounds or movements, and Kay didn't bark or even growl. Sinking her fingers into his thick fur, she pulled back the curtain to peer out the window of the carriage. Rain trailed down the glass in slow rivulets. Though it was daytime, the dense clouds crowded out the sun, likening it to dawn in the Bahamas. She guessed it to be midday. Beyond the rain, shops and small homes lined the street. Her stomach jumped. They were in London. She would have to contain her excitement for a few more days before she would be free to explore the city. Her companion snored softly on the seat across from her. Catherine had already informed the coachman of their new destination, But it would be much more difficult to convince Diana of the wisdom of her plan. London was so much larger than New Orleans. They passed seemingly endless blocks of houses and buildings before fields and forest predominated as they headed further north. Diana sat up and stretched.
Have we reached London yet?
Without meeting her eyes, Catherine nodded.
Several hours ago.
Diana sighed dramatically.
What sort of scheme are you plotting?
She knew Catherine well, too well.
I think we should go to Wolseley Manor now, today.
Her eyes narrowed.
That is not the plan.
Well, it wasn't our original plan, but now that I've had time to think about it, it makes more sense to go to Wolseley and find the journal before we settle in London. Diana didn't budge.
Dearest, I'm hungry, and I want a proper bath. Why can't we rest here before heading off on your wild goose chase to Derbyshire?
It just doesn't make sense to settle in London and then have to leave again. Besides, we're already well north of the city. Kay curled up beside her, and after glaring at her one more time, Diana closed her eyes, resigned to her fate. Catherine quivered with anticipation. She couldn't wait to explore Wolseley Manor. She couldn't wait to read great-grandmother's journal. She couldn't wait to solve the mystery and locate the diamond tiara. By their third day of travel, even Catherine had grown weary of the endless monotony of riding in the carriage. She tried to read her book, but looking down made her queasy, so writing in her diary was out of the question as well. As they drew nearer to Derbyshire, she studied the changing landscape with interest. This was where her mother had grown up. She had been about Catherine's age when her father, Viscount Wolseley, died after being thrown from his horse, and a distant cousin inherited the title and property, changing the course of her life. The carriage slowed to a stop, and Catherine ran her fingers over her hair in an effort to repair her appearance. Following a brisk knock, the door opened to reveal Mr. Eddington. Kay stepped in front of Catherine in a protective gesture, but wagged his tail nonetheless. The coachman removed his hat and gave Kay a pat on the head.
Miss Malbeuf, we are nearing a crossroad. Do you want to proceed directly to Wolseley Manor, or would you like to make arrangements to stay at the inn in Nunfield?
He looked pointedly at the sun, which crept farther west with each passing moment. Catherine wrinkled her nose and turned to Diana. Her countenance left no doubt as to her preference.
I expect we should secure rooms at the inn before proceeding. Thank you, Mr. Eddington.
Diana met her eyes.
I can see what you're thinking. It's much too late to make a call at Wolseley today. We will secure our rooms, eat dinner, and get a good night's rest before visiting tomorrow.
As they turned onto the road to the right, Catherine's gaze strayed to the left, hoping for a glimpse of Wolseley Manor. But there was nothing to be seen except trees and fields. The village of Nunfield wasn't far, and she had Diana and Mr. Eddington settled into rooms at the inn in no time. Diana opted to rest before ordering dinner. Perhaps it was a bit late for a social call, but Catherine didn't care. She was finally here, and she would go to Wolseley now. Separate rooms for herself and Diana gave her greater freedom of movement. She pulled on a pair of men's breeches underneath her dress and checked the placement of her knife before strapping the scabbard that held her cutlass to the outside of her thigh. Kay wagged his tail and trotted to the door. If she left him alone in her room, he would bark, and she couldn't very well ask Diana to watch him, so he would have to go with her. They set off toward the stables behind the inn. She made arrangements to have a horse saddled for her use, but was a bit dismayed when she discovered they had given her a side saddle. Of course, she had ridden with one before. Social conventions similar to those here required her to use one when in New Orleans. But at home, in the Bahamas, she rode astride, without a saddle. She would have to make do. Once she was secure in the saddle, she turned to leave. The sun was near the western horizon, and would soon begin its descent. Catherine had to locate Wolseley before it became dark.
Miss Malbouf, her coachman called. Do you wish me to accompany you? I shouldn't like to think of you getting lost out there alone, especially once the sun goes down.
It would be safer to have someone with her on the ride to Wolseley, so it made sense to accept his offer. Once she returned, it didn't matter if Diana found out what she was about.
That would be lovely. Can you ask for direction to Wolseley Manor, please, Mr. Eddington?
You can call me Thomas, m'lady.
He grinned.
And there is no need to seek direction. I grew up in Derbyshire and know my way around.
She gave him a grateful smile.
Thank you, Thomas. I'm simply Miss Malbouf.
Although he might soon discover how unladylike she could be. He returned a few moments later on a bay gelding, and they headed out. They soon reached the crossroads that had led them to the inn and continued on toward Wolseley. The woods gave way to fields fenced for livestock, and small cottages dotted the landscape. She was able to catch glimpses of stone through the trees. When they circled a hillock, Wolseley Manor came into view. It was extraordinary, even more grand than what Mama had described. She'd never seen such an enormous building, let alone a home for a single family, not even in New Orleans. It looked more like a castle than a house. What could they possibly need with all those rooms?
Are you familiar with the owner, ma'am?
Thomas asked.
No, I haven't had the pleasure of meeting the owners yet.
It's just one owner. The Duke of Bulstrode lives alone.
Catherine's mouth dropped open.
One man lives here, alone. What was he doing in her mother's house?
Yes, ma'am.
He laughed.
Along with a bevy of servants, of course. My cousin works in the stables.
The horses' hooves clattered against the bridge as they crossed the River Wye, which flanked the property, and Thomas led her to what he referred to as the lower courtyard entrance. They dismounted, and he took her mare's reins.
I'll take the horses to the stables. You can have the butler send for me when you're ready to leave.
Thank you, Thomas,
she said, distracted by the grandeur of the house until Kay jumped up on her leg.
Could you please take Kay with you as well? I'm not certain he will be welcome in the house.
He touched the brim of his hat in response, and she turned back to the house. She could hardly grasp that her mother had spent her childhood here. The seemingly ever-present clouds were gathering on the darkening horizon, threatening a wet ride back to the village. She squared her shoulders and strode toward the door, which popped open while she was still several feet away.
May I help you, lady?
The butler asked.
Miss, I am Miss Malbouf.
She sucked in a breath and willed her voice to remain steady.
I would like to request an audience with the Duke of Bulstrode.
He pursed his lips.
May I tell His Grace what this is in regard to?
It is a bit of a long story, but my mother, Helena Wolseley, used to live here. Her father was Lord Wolseley.
The butler raised his brows and ushered her in. He stood holding the door open for several seconds before leaning out and perusing the stoop, no doubt wondering where her maid was. Perhaps she ought to have coerced Diana to join her after all. If the butler noted her lack of proper escort, the Duke certainly would. Mama had warned her about the strict social conventions in England. No matter, she couldn't do anything about it now. Apparently convinced of her lack of escort, the butler led her to a drawing room.
Please make yourself comfortable. I shall ascertain whether His Grace is at home.
He turned on his heel and left the room, shutting the door softly behind him. How could he not know whether the Duke was at home? Though the house was certainly enormous, one would think the butler, of all people, would know the whereabouts of the owner. Losing him seemed a dereliction of duty on his part. Too restless to sit, she wandered around the room. She stopped to warm her hands at the fireplace, noting the ornate mantel clock and huge oil painting of some grand fellow hanging over the mantel. Her stomach quivered. Perhaps she was related to him. It was odd to think she had relatives here in this land that was so foreign to her. The door squeaked open, and the butler entered.
Miss Malbouf, I regret to inform you that His Grace is not at home."
He held out his arm to usher her to the door. She drew her brows together. She hadn't travelled all this way to give up so easily.
"Is there a more convenient time I might call?"
she asked as politely as she could.
"I'm afraid I don't know, ma'am."
He tilted his head toward the door in a not-so-subtle gesture, and she followed him into the corridor. Perhaps she would do a bit of exploring on her own. It wouldn't hurt to examine the outside of the house and locate the library. Though the cousin who inherited the property after her grandfather's death had insisted everything in the library, including her great-grandmother's journal, belonged to him, Mama had assured her that it had been well hidden.
"Your cloak, madam," the butler said, placing it on her shoulders.
"Thank you."
She hurried down the stairs and walked toward the stables until the door clicked firmly behind her. Continuing around the corner of the house, she acted as if she was headed toward the stables, but when she reached the rear of the house, she veered left into the gardens. Squeezing between the bushes and the outside wall of the manor, she followed her way down the back of the house in the rapidly dwindling light of day. The sun had dropped below the horizon, and it grew darker by the second. The wind picked up, and the temperature seemed to drop several degrees in an instant. Mama had said that the library was in the northwest corner. The garden sloped down at this end of the house, making it difficult for her to peer through the window, but she was certain she saw bookshelves. She pulled herself up onto the narrow window ledge, grateful for all the climbing of trees and ruins she had done in the Bahamas to strengthen her arms. Papa often joked that she would have made a wonderful sailor if she had been a boy. She pressed her face to the glass, but aside from a banked fire glowing in the enormous fireplace, there was no sign of activity in the room. Catherine attempted to lift the window, but it was latched. After pulling her small knife from her boot, she slipped it between the panes, clicking the latch open as Papa had taught her. She raised the window slowly, alert to any movement from within, but there was none. Feet first, she slid through the small opening and closed the window behind her.
Someone was breaking into his library. From his position behind the desk opposite the fireplace, he was likely invisible to the intruder, who appeared to be a woman. It seemed unlikely that a male thief would utilize women's clothing as a disguise. No one would willingly encumber himself with skirts, especially if he had housebreaking in mind. Nick held himself still, waiting to see what she would do. It had to be the Wolseley girl who had attempted to call on him. She was closer to the fireplace than he, and it illuminated her chestnut hair. She lifted her skirts halfway up her leg, and a finely shaped leg it was, to slide a small knife into her boot. She wore breeches underneath her skirts, and a much larger weapon was strapped to the outside of her thigh. Whoever this girl was, she was serious. Just when he didn't think the evening could become any more bizarre, she plonked herself down on the floor and removed her boots, then slid her feet back and forth across the Aubusson carpet, almost as if she were scratching them. He couldn't help but note the delicate curve of her ankle and the graceful arch of her foot. Really, it was impossible to ignore a shoeless woman breaking into his library. She arched and flexed her feet as if they had barely survived the cruel confines of her boots, then stood and headed to the shelves in the opposite corner and began removing books from the first two. Once all of the books were stacked neatly on the floor, she crouched and felt around in the back corner where the boards met. She fumbled around for some time, her features scrunched into a scowl, until he decided this had gone on long enough. It was time to reveal himself.
"May I be of service?"
he asked in a not-so-quiet tone. She jumped at the sound of his voice and whacked the top of her head against the shelf. Spinning quickly, she turned toward him as she pulled a cutlass from the sheath on the outside of her thigh and crouched in a defensive position. He noticed three things at once, each of which caused the hair on the back of his neck to rise. First, Her countenance left no doubt that she was prepared to use her weapon. Second, she wielded the cutlass in a way that spoke to her proficiency with said weapon. And third, her eyes were a deep emerald green that was rarely found outside of a forest. He held up his hands.
I mean you no harm. Yet.
He stood and walked around to the front of the desk and leaned against it, arms crossed.
May I ask what you are doing in my library?
Like a cornered animal, she flicked her eyes from him to the door, then to the window in the opposite corner. Her eyes narrowed as her gaze settled back on him.
Your library.
He nodded. Straightening, she lowered the cutlass, holding it against the outside of her thigh.
You are the Duke of Bulstrich.
Yes.
He couldn't quite place her accent, a strange mix of English with a faint French lilt. Her face dropped and she lifted her eyes away.
But if you are here, why did your butler say you were not at home?
Her confusion was genuine, revealing a vulnerability that touched the hollow space inside him. He did not respond, but waited for her to reveal more.
Why did you lie about not being at home?
The woman was too much by half. If a man had made such an accusation, Nick would have called him out. He stood and strode toward her, stopping with his nose mere inches from her admittedly exquisite face. Stepping back so she was against the window, she lifted her cutlass.
Madam, I suggest you identify yourself at once, or I shall have you thrown out.
She glared up at him.
You haven't answered my question.
He stretched to his full height and squared his shoulders, ready to issue a much-deserved dressing down to the chit.
I am the Duke of Bulstrich, and you have broken into my home. I have no obligation to answer your questions.
I should think my identity would be obvious, as your butler announced my arrival not a half hour ago.
He preferred her earlier vulnerability to this shrewishness.
So, you are Miss Wolseley?
No. Helena Wolseley is my mother. I am Catherine Malbeuf, she said, her chin held high.
The name sounded familiar for some reason, but he couldn't place it. He raised a brow.
What are you doing in my library, Miss Malbeuf?
She crossed her arms, but did not move to sheathe the cutlass.
Looking for my great-grandmother's journal. It belongs to my mother.
I'm afraid not. The contents of my house belong to me.
He could almost see her thinking, working out how to proceed.
As you may have guessed, my mother was the daughter of Viscount Wolseley. When she left, she was unable to take the journal with her. It is a precious family heirloom, and I wish to have it back.
Precious family heirloom, my arse. What did she really want with it? As I said previously, anything that remained in the house when I purchased it belongs to me.
She bit her lip.
But I need that journal.
What she needed were some lessons in behaviour becoming a lady. Her actions were disgraceful. Though she was not entirely responsible for her character deficiencies, no, her parents shared the blame. He felt a modicum of sympathy for her, but not enough to sway his decision.
I'm afraid I can't help you. It's time for you to leave, before I turn you in to the magistrate.
He tugged the bell pull and watched her to make sure she didn't dash back out the window. Rather than attempting to escape, she moved back to the shelves and began to replace the books in the exact order in which she had found them, only once running her hand along the back of a shelf, presumably in the hope of finding the journal. Her actions were disconcerting. It was a rare occurrence when someone surprised him, yet she had done it multiple times in a matter of minutes. Many a man had balked when receiving a direct order from him, but this woman calmly defied him in favour of returning the books to their rightful locations. Her lower lip trembled slightly, the only sign that she was affected by his command. The fire outlined her profile, the soft turn of her cheek, the gentle slope of her nose.
He shifted and shook his head to break the spell she had cast over him. A knock sounded.
"You may enter,"
he said, knowing it was Phillips answering his summons.
"Your Grace,"
he bowed.
"Phillips, would you please escort Miss Malbeth from the premises?"
Phillips' eyes widened, and he shot an incredulous look at the lady in question. He tilted his head to the right and levelled his butler with a stare.
"And this time, make certain she leaves." "Yes, Your Grace."
Phillips strode over, grasped her arm, and led her from the room. When the door began to close, she turned to meet Nick's gaze, challenge in her eyes. He walked to the window and watched as a footman brought her horse around. Interesting. Both her horse and that of her escort were of the finest quality. The woman might be common, but she did not lack resources. Though it was shameless for her to travel without a female chaperone, at least she had brought a footman. And a dog. She knelt and wrapped her arms around the scruffy creature, burying her face in his fur. Malbeth. The name was so familiar. Nick went around behind his desk and leafed through the newspaper. There it was. Mention of a shipping corporation owned by a Claude Malbeth. Good Lord. The man was a reformed pirate who ran his business from New Orleans, of all places. The foolish girl probably didn't realize she could have been hanged for breaking into his home. His thoughts were interrupted by a knock.
Enter. Your Grace, I wanted to apologize for...
He lifted a hand. There is no need to apologize. You could not have anticipated that the lady would break into my library. I haven't quite grasped it myself. He leaned back in his chair and clasped his hands over his stomach. Surely she wasn't travelling alone with only a footman to see to her welfare, was she? Though he had no responsibility whatsoever for her, he could not leave her unprotected. He stood.
Have my horse saddled immediately. Yes, Your Grace.
He bowed and exited. It seemed likely that her parents were staying at the inn in Nunfield, and she had simply escaped their supervision. If the entire family planned to descend upon him, he would do well to be forewarned. He opened the bottom drawer of his desk and drew out a box. If she wanted the journal badly enough to break into his house, there must be something in it he had missed when he read it. The journal fit snugly in the pocket of his overcoat. He had no doubt she would return, and he couldn't risk her finding it before he determined its value. Nick strode through the house and out the front door, where his stallion shuffled restlessly at the foot of the stoop. Taking the reins from the groom, he mounted. Thick clouds filtered the light from the setting sun. Though he relished a good gallop, it wouldn't be safe with such low visibility, and he couldn't risk catching up with Miss Malbeth before she reached the inn, which was just under 3 miles from Wolseley. He set out at a leisurely pace. Bright light poured from the window of the inn, lighting the entrance and making it easy for Nick to peer inside to make sure the Malbeth woman wasn't around. He expected she would be less than thrilled to see him again. He leapt down and handed the stallion's reins to a waiting groom.
I shan't be long. Your Grace, to what do we owe the pleasure?
Asked Mr. Jones, the inn's proprietor, as he rushed to take his coat. Nick pulled off his gloves and gestured to a door leading from the main reception area.
Is there somewhere we may speak in private? Of course, right this way, Your Grace.
He indicated Nick should precede him into the room and shut the door behind them. The innkeeper rubbed his hands together.
I hope nothing is amiss, Your Grace.
Not at all. I simply wish to inquire about one of your guests, a Miss Malbeth.
His eyes widened.
Miss Malbeth? She seemed a proper young lady, arrived this afternoon in a right nice private carriage, but with only a maid and a coachman accompanying her.
Just as he had feared, the foolish woman was travelling virtually alone. What sort of father allowed his daughter to travel by herself to another continent? A pirate, that was who. Despite her impertinence, she deserved the same consideration he would show to any other woman in need of protection. He also had no doubt that she would make known her connection to the Wolseley family, and he would not have it said that he had done anything improper in his handling of the situation.
Miss Malbeth is a friend of the family, One of my footmen will be spending the night outside her room and will escort her back to Wolseley in the morning.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?